I don't really know how I would have made it through without Christ. Believe it or not, if you're going through a hard time, there will become a day when it's not in the front of your mind anymore, and you have to actually think about, like, how long ago was that? I don't believe God gave me cancer, but I believe He allowed me to go through this situation. I still had hope because of who God is mm-hmm. in my life, and so I just really tried to remain connected to the Lord in my Bible reading, my prayer time. My rhythms had to change some days, many days when I was going through surgery, recovery, or chemo, but God was still present in that. How do we put ourselves in positions to have like that maximum connection with the Lord? And if there's anything else in the way, I just want to say we need to get rid of it because yeah. It's just not worth it. It's not worth it.
This is the Made to Advance podcast. I'm your host, Brian Ollick. We're here to inspire and equip you for your best future.
Hey, everybody. It's so good to be with you today. I'm really excited about our conversation. But before we get to that, I want to encourage you to rate and review Made to Advance. That helps us get the word out about the podcast to more people. And it's an encouragement to our team. Hey, I do want to mention that we've got an email here at Made to Advance. It's madetoadvance@engedichurch.com. And so in an upcoming episode, we're just going to respond to questions that come in from you, our listeners. And so if you got a question that you would like us to consider wrestling with on a live podcast, we'd love for you to send it in. That's madetoadvance@engedichurch.com. And look forward to seeing what you guys submit. Today, I've got a really special guest with me, and her name is Christina Ollick. Christina is the pastor of Global Missions at Engedi Church, which she co-founded 20 years ago. But most importantly, she is my wife of 28 years and the mother of our three incredible kids. And so, Christina, welcome to Made to Advance.
It's good to be with you, Brian. Thanks for having me.
We are going to be so cheesy. I can already feel
yeah.
it. You know, it's crazy because I was like, we have talked about doing one of these together for about 2 years now, yeah. which is as long as Made to Advance has been around. What has taken us so long?
I don't know. I guess you've had so many interesting guests. You know, it's been just, we're waiting for our time to share what the Lord has for us to say.
This is the moment, though. This is the moment. And it's nice because, you know, Mike Lipke was here a few weeks ago. And I know you listened to that conversation, and he did this thing at the end where basically, you know, he said, I'll make a special financial gift to missions at Engedi Church if you put a Purdue hat on. And say, what did I have to say? Boiler up, I think.
I think you said boiler up, yes.
I still feel dirty from it. And so it's good to have like another IU fan in here.
That's right. Everybody thinks that it's only you. And I have to say, listen, I'm second generation IU. Come on.
Exactly.
So Go Big Red.
We're going to represent Go Big Red. We could sing the Hoosier fight song if you'd like.
I'll cheer you on if you want to do that.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is every time we sing it, there's one word I always get wrong.
Oh, and
so,
yeah.
You know, we'd probably
more than one.
Oh, man, this was a mistake. Why did we have her in? Chuck, we're going to have to edit her out later. I don't have to fix this. So anyway, well, we were kicking around like what to talk about, and this is going to be fun. And there are a few different themes. What's nice is we talked about these different themes, and I think that they would all make great future episodes if you're willing to come back, that is, after this first conversation. But it was funny because one of the things that we talked about that I wasn't actually originally as inclined to like be the subject was talking about your cancer journey from many years back. And so we were kind of debating and all that. And then right as we were discussing this, I got a text, which is honestly, this is pretty doggone uncommon, but I got a text from a dude who's part of our church who's dealing with cancer, not for the first time. And he was just in this like, man, I am just so ready to be done with all of this and, you know, disheartened and all that. And so that made me think, okay, even though this wasn't necessarily the first thing on my list, and maybe this is a way that the Holy Spirit's kind of pressing in and giving us a push.
Right.
And so before we get into it, I'll just say that as you're listening, we are going to talk about Christina's journey with cancer and a little bit about what both of us went through, obviously, during that experience. But keep in mind that many of the things we'll be sharing are not just limited to somebody going through cancer. It's really a broader conversation about how do you go through difficult things? How do you go through suffering and pain? And we hope that some of the things that we experienced will be transferable to other situations. So with all that said, maybe you could take us back, Christina, and just kind of help people understand what that journey was like, how old you were, how you found out, and the journey of treatment after that.
Yeah. So I was trying to do the math, and the good thing is it's been so far past when this happened. Believe it or not, if you're going through a hard time, there will become a day when it's not in the front of your mind anymore, and you have to actually think about, like, how long ago was that?
Right.
So for me, I was 34 years old when this all kind of went down. Our kids were 7, 5, and 2, and Getty was a baby church as well. And I had just actually, I was in probably the best physical shape of my life at that point, and I had a routine annual exam. Mm-hmm. And when I went to the doctor, they did an exam, and she said, "Hey, you know, we're just seeing something here that could be normal for you, but let's just get a baseline mammogram to make sure that when you're older and have to start having these every year, we know what your normal is." And so I went and had that test done, and at the end of that test, they said there's an 80% chance that you have breast cancer, and I was floored. Mm-hmm. I don't have a history of breast cancer in my family. I had no risk factors for it, and it was just like an alternate reality had just begun, and 80% is a pretty high chance, and so that felt really heavy. But what ended up happening was, I'm thinking about the date. It was almost 17 years to the day. We're just a few days away from that the diagnosis was confirmed that it was breast cancer. And so after that diagnosis, I had a bilateral mastectomy that was then followed by 4 rounds of chemo and 5.5 weeks of radiation. And then about 2 years later, I had to have the reconstructive process completely redone on the radiated side. And it was a more intense surgery in some ways than the first one, which was major. So this was a journey that went on for quite some time.
Yeah, I remember when we first met with the surgeon, she said, "Just know that this is basically going to be the story for the next year of your life."
Right.
Which, even at that time, I mean, the whole thing was so shocking. So it's like, first you get this diagnosis that in a million years you would have never expected.
Right.
And of course, you know, I don't know if you remember this, but I just remember like being in the doctor's office and us just sitting in the parking lot afterwards crying, thinking, "Oh
yeah.
My gosh, this is real."
Yeah.
So that was when we got the diagnosis. But then meeting with the surgeon, who was just wonderful, but she said, "This is, you know, this will be the next year of your life," which was bizarre to mm-hmm. hear. What was more bizarre is it ended up being, you'll correct me if I get the months wrong here, but like more like 2 years was the
right.
pretty much.
Probably 2.5 years.
Two yeah. and a half mm-hmm. between different surgeries, and we had some different complications that happened. And so it really.
And medication for 9 years.
Yeah, after that. That's yeah. right. Yeah. So it became quite a journey, lots of ups and downs along the way and whatnot. One of the things that I think that you really did a good job with, you're going through chemo, we shaved your head, we did all the things that people think about. You felt bad from the medication. All these things are going on, recovery for surgery, and that was very complex and demanding, and pain medications and all the things.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, though you for sure had down days, on the balance, you really worked hard to keep your spirit positive and strong. And I guess it would be interesting to hear your reflections on how did you approach the mental sort of internal side of the whole thing.
Yeah, that's a great question, and also thank you for that encouragement, because you know, when you're in the midst of that, you don't always know how others are experiencing you. But, you know, it's interesting when I think back to that season of my life before the diagnosis ever came, I really believe the Lord was preparing me to go through a period of time that I never saw coming. And a couple of examples, I had recently read a couple of books about actually about missions and about compassion and serving the poor. And it just so happened that the main people in those books were women who went through cancer. Mm. And one of them had a recurrence of cancer. And that wasn't the story of the book. It was more about, like, how do I fulfill the calling God has in my life, even in the midst of these things? And in the other book, the woman actually passed away. and her life really affected her husband and the life of someone else that was close to them as they watched her navigate this journey with mm-hmm. faith. And I remember reading those books thinking, I want to be like them, you know, just in general. Mm-hmm. And I really hadn't, we'd had a miscarriage early on in our early years of marriage, but I really hadn't gone through a period of suffering in my life prior to this, outside of the miscarriage. And I don't know that I would have been super well equipped had I not had at least some practical examples of people who navigated this with grace mm-hmm. and navigated it with Jesus at the center. So it was like I had already made that decision mm-hmm. about how I would show up for something before the time actually came. So then, you know, on the day we heard it could be, you know, 80% chance, and this is like, I mean, they could have sent anything that I just was not expecting. And I remember just feeling like, okay, this is my time. I'm going to have to walk through this. We both had that sense. And yeah. I remember that.
Yeah. Praying for healing.
Praying for
a miracle. But
right.
we did have a sense that God's journey to get on the other side of healing wasn't going to be one that we would call miraculous, where it just disappeared, that it was going to be
right.
more healing through the process and of surgery, medicine, et cetera.
Right, yeah. right. So in the in-between time of 80% to it's 100% clear, it was a daily choice to say, okay, this is going to be our journey. I don't believe God gave me cancer, but I believe he allowed me to go through this situation. And I remember thinking at the time, you know, God's entrusted me with a lot of things up to this point. And I think they started small and they got a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger. And this was a really big thing
mm-hmm.
that God was entrusting to me to steward and to decide how I was going to show up. And so at moments, I cried all the tears and thought I wasn't going to have any more tears left all throughout this journey, and felt the grief and felt the loss and felt the indignity of it all. And at the same time, I still had hope because of who God is mm-hmm. in my life. And so practically, what did this look like to walk this out? You know, I just really tried to remain connected to the Lord in my Bible reading, my prayer time. My rhythms had to change some days, many days when I was going through surgery recovery or chemo. I did not have the mental awareness to be like in the Bible and reading it in the same way. So my rhythms had to change a little bit, mm-hmm. but God was still present in that. And so I think, you know, just remaining connected to the Lord was a big thing. Being physically active. I mean, this is super practical, but, you know, continuing to find ways to move my body and have mm-hmm. agency.
Yeah.
You know, there are benefits to moving our bodies, just physical benefits, but there is like an agency component to it. And even to the point, I don't know, maybe some counselor would tell me this is an indication of something else, but even to the point, every time I had chemo, I like crazy cleaned the house, and we did a house project every weekend that we had chemo.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know who does that, but I just think it's a little bit of that, like, asserting some level mm-hmm. of agency in the situation. And, you know, we had people that surrounded us, which was also just a beautiful story of relying on our community to be what we couldn't be.
Right.
And, you know, you may remember this too, like, just this is the baby years of planting our church. And here we are, like, it's full speed ahead, but we were in a season of need. And we had a choice to make. Were we going to allow people into our season of need? And as we made that choice, the church really showed up for us in such a really practical way that made such a difference.
Let's talk about that for a sec. You know, it's interesting because people will say, like, oh, you know, let us know if we can help or mm-hmm. things like that. And we're not the first to make this observation, but you really do learn what actually helps in situations mm-hmm. like that. And so when I think about like my recollection of what it was like with like the people that really helped, I'll share a couple things, then you can jump in if other things come to mind. But it, you know, it turns out, I mean, on the one hand, I would say that just people's well wishes and prayers did mean a lot. Sometimes people feel like, oh, it's just, you know, mm-hmm. I just texted or I just prayed. And it was like, no. And even like, and you know, I had one person in particular that they would text me. I mean, man, he would text me like sometimes every other day or whatever. And it was awesome to mm-hmm. get those texts, like just a verse or just a, you know, I'm praying for you or whatever. So that, I think texts in general were really nice, even for those people that like just were super, you know, I don't say disciplined, but kind of like regular or whatever. That really registered and landed in a cool way. Then another thing that comes to my mind is people who just like came up with ideas and more or less executed.
Right.
And because it's still weird. You don't exactly know what to ask for. And even though you're in a position of clear need, you still feel weird. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, asking for people to do this or that. Mm-hmm. People brought, of course, tons of food, which was awesome. And they, you know, people scheduled that. And that was, again, it was a gift. And when people would be sensitive to like, what do you guys like too? That was really nice. Yeah. I mean, not that we're looking for some gourmet food, right. But if, you know, it's like if, you know, somebody doesn't do dairy and then you show up with macaroni and cheese. I mean, it's just like,
right.
You know, so I thought that was cool. Any other things that were either practical things that come to mind or principles you thought about when it comes to helping people?
Yeah. You know, I think that, staying connected was a huge thing, like people texting and I remember there was somebody that was in relationship with us that they're like, hey, we know it's intense at the beginning, but we also know this is going to be a journey for many months. And so they actually rallied the small group infrastructure of our church, and they scheduled different small groups to do an act of service for us for an entire year, like once a month.
Okay.
So there was one time a small group came and it was like extreme home makeover descended on our house. They did landscaping. It was the deep cleaning that I don't think I had ever even done.
I didn't even know that stuff could be cleaned at the level they cleaned it. That was so great.
Yeah. And it was all kinds of stuff. And of course, we had little kids at the time. And I think that the two easiest things for people outside of let us know if you need help, which you're never going to be like, hey, I need help now. I mean, it's just like awkward. They would say, oh, can I bring you food or can I watch your kids? And I was actually kind of protective about, I don't want everybody watching our kids. Like,
right, sure.
I want to be their mom and I want stability for them. And at the same time, I understand I need help. And so it was a little bit tricky to know how to navigate that. But I think what it taught me was a couple of things as the person going through it. One, receive offers for help. Like, don't feel like you have to just, you know, pull up the bootstraps and grin mm-hmm. and bear it. Like, receive help. But also do that in a way that's authentic to who you are. And then on the reverse side, be practical and specific about when you're offering to help someone see their need, even if it's just presence. I had friends that went with me to buy a wig. You know, yeah, I had another friend who went with me to buy pajamas that I could button because I wasn't going to be able to raise my arms very well. You know, I had friends that just were in it with me. And those little touches really meant a lot. The other thing I would say, even if there were, I don't even know, God just did something. There were people from different states that were sending us cards of encouragement, prayer, like knit prayer blankets. It got to the point where every single day I would go to the mailbox and think, oh, what's going to be in here for me today, you know?
Yeah.
Someone put a bunch of pink flamingos in our yard overnight. We never knew who they were. Like, they would just drop things off. And so even those little things that may not seem like a big thing to the giver, when you're on the receiving side, especially if there are multiple of those things, it just helps you to feel seen. Like, I'm seen. God mm-hmm. sees me. And it matters. Yeah. My suffering matters.
Yeah. Well, especially when, not that you were totally out of, you know, in like just at home, out of the community, but you were at home a lot more than usual. And so then you feel even less kind of seen because you're sitting up. And I just remember thinking how many hours you spent sitting up in our bedroom and recuperating.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that strikes me that was a strength of yours is in the middle of the process is I think you did a good job too of just not looking for, we still looked for every chance we could to laugh in the mm-hmm. midst of it. And to me, one of my all-time favorite memories, maybe we can put this in the show notes, is when our kids, they were really into Star Wars. They still love Star Wars.
I know what you're going to say now.
But there was a character named Ventress who was a female who was bald.
Yep.
And
she was kind of scary looking, too.
Scary, but one of our kids said, you looked like Ventress.
No, it was we said, I'm going to lose my hair, I'm going to be bald. And they said, Mommy, are you going to look like Ventress?
And you just enjoyed it and laughed. Instead of like getting, you know, overly messed with by it and all that, which is good.
Now, Now, I have a question for you. How did you stay positive in the midst of this? Because everything, like we were saying with Engedi, was just going bananas. Like we were starting to add a second. So we were getting ready to add a second service. I think the Sunday I came back after my surgery was the first day of our second service. So we were growing like crazy, renovating space. All this stuff is happening. You're super busy managing church stuff and managing the load at home and being there present for me emotionally and just physically present. Like, how did you stay positive and hope-filled and just get through that season?
Well, I think that similar to you, I mean, I just, and this has been true my whole life, I just kept making time to be still with God. And that to me is the absolute foundation on it, on everything. No matter what the season is get still with God, hear His voice, be empowered in fresh ways by the Holy Spirit. So that stayed, I would say, consistent, but was never more important than it was during that season. I think that in some ways the reality that the church was growing so much and things were happening that were really encouraging was good because it sort of forces a person to remember that cancer isn't the only reality in life.
Right.
And I just think that, you know, that for any of us, when something painful is going on, mm-hmm. you can really just get myopic in your view, and all you mm-hmm. think about is your pain and your problem and all that. And I think that that helped me just keep a perspective that was bigger than just what we were going through. Mm-hmm. And because it was so hard. I mean, it's a, you know, as a husband and any spouse who's been in a similar situation, it's such a weird thing to watch somebody you love so much suffering and just to basically feel powerless. It's a terrible feeling to just go, I mean, yes, you can comfort them, but you really can't fix it. And that's super tough. So it can take over in that way. And I just think that it, you know, the having bigger things, not fully pulling back. I think sometimes the reality people have is like, oh man, I have to just like pull back from everything. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's the right move. Mm-hmm. You know, in some ways, I didn't have the option of that because of what was going on. And I think that was probably good. Mm-hmm. I was as obviously, and you know this, but you were my first priority, and I knew hands down, like you needed to feel fully, you know, like I was fully present as much as you could possibly need me to be fully present. So, but with that in mind as my number one kind of guiding light during that time, then it was nice to have things that were like, okay, the kingdom of God is moving and all that. I think another thing that was really important was I had one friendship in particular. You know, I didn't want to sit there and talk about this to all kinds of people and all that, but it's an interesting thing when your spouse is going through something, you're not connecting with your spouse in the same ways as you normally would emotionally, physically, because of all the things. And you know, that registers, and you, on the one hand, there were a couple times I was more transparent with you about that stuff, but you really don't want to put that on the person who's going through something, yet it's a legit experience that you need to process somewhere. And so I think it was really helpful during that season. I had a guy that I met with probably almost weekly, and, you know, we would just catch up and talk, and it would talk about what's going on in his life, which was, again, nice just to not be focused on me or my stuff or our stuff, but also he was a great listener, and I could just be super, super honest, mm-hmm. and that was helpful. When I think about the transparency with people thing, it's funny, and this is, of course, more true back then than it is now, but your wiring would more be inclined towards not sitting there putting everything out in front of everybody. So you really had to deal with like, how much am I going to let people into this thing? And I guess it'd be interesting to just share maybe a little bit of what that process or that decision was like. Who mm-hmm. am I going to let in? How much am I going to let them in? And then obviously, ultimately, where that went was sharing it in a broader fashion.
Yeah, I think that's a great thing to press into. And before I get to that, I was thinking about what you were saying about just mindset, relationships, going to the Lord. And I think it's worth pointing out that for both of us, going through this particular difficult thing and others that we've been through as well, what we don't do is just look within ourselves and say, I'm going to power up and I'm going to rise to this occasion. Like mm-hmm. we have to do that somewhat, but I don't think we really have what it takes mm-hmm. to persevere and endure and be everything the Lord has for us in a situation like that without going to the Lord with it.
Yeah.
And I think in the cancer survivor community in general, there's a lot of like, you know, self-talk of I'm going to do this and like identity found through that. And there's part of me that just wanted to resist that a little bit of saying like, you know, this isn't my identity. Mm-hmm. My identity remains in Christ. And that's where I'm going to push in because I can't just like actualize positivity and the ability to manufacture strength through it. And I saw that in you as well of just like really going to the Lord. So to the question of like, you know, how transparent to be, how authentic to be, how to let people in or not, you know, everybody is on a different end of the spectrum with that. And because I think we are at the beginning of this journey and our church was fairly small, but so legit in terms of like they really cared about us, you know? And when this news was coming out, you know, someone said, hey, I think you should start a Caring Bridge page. And I was like, oh, what? I don't even know what you're talking about. And at
do
first,
people still do these, by the way?
They do, actually. Okay, gotcha. I actually just received one.
You'll have to explain what it is at some point.
Okay. Well, it's a little website, or I don't want to say little, but it's a website you can create to just like a blog to help people understand what a person's medical updates are, medical journey is, so that it helps with the flow of communication and not have all the information have to be onesie twosie, but it can be out there in mass. So someone had suggested that we do that. And first I was like, no, thank you. I do not want to do that. Like, I don't know. It just, this is my personal business. And on the other hand, I was recognizing, hey, we're surrounded by a band of people here in our growing church and others in our life who genuinely care. And I think I just need to accept the reality that there needs to be a clear way to communicate. So at first I accepted that. And then I just thought, all right, I'm just going to give them the facts. Like, this is the diagnosis information, here's surgery, whatever. And then I realized that as I started to communicate that, my fear, I guess I was afraid probably, if I really think about it, afraid of letting people in to the most tender and vulnerable places. And because you don't want to get hurt. You're already hurting so much. And then to be a little bit more raw and open, it's like the last thing you want is someone hurting you more.
Right, because they can comment, like I think that, as I recall, people can comment on things you would post or whatever.
Or
even
just
if they
in
didn't
general,
comment on it, they in, know something and then say something dumb or whatever.
Right, right. Yeah. People say things and they don't think about what they're saying, or they say things with good intentions that aren't the best. And so I think I was afraid of being hurt. And that's the thing about being vulnerable is there is a risk. And that's why it's called vulnerability.
Right.
But the more I realized, hey, I've got to get the information out there, I started to feel a little bit more safe in saying, this isn't so bad. But I think also like trusting the Lord, because again, going back to, I knew he had trusted me with this situation. And if I'm really going to walk this out in the way that I believe he wants me to, I've got to be more transparent about the full journey and not just the medical facts, because this was a terrible situation. And I don't really know how I would have made it through without Christ. And I realized this is also now becoming a platform where I can give a reason for the hope that I have.
Mm-hmm.
And I can be real about the grief that I'm experiencing and the just loss of dignity of not having hair and having mastectomy and just where's my identity? Like, it just a lot of stuff. I can be real about that, but then I can also say, but my identity rests in my relationship with Jesus. And because of what he's done for me, I have hope that supersedes the situation that I'm in right now. And then it became, this became a huge platform.
So basically what you started doing is basically regularly, and maybe not every day, but writing, and you would talk about, yes, the physical, medical kind of updates, but then reflect on just kind of what God was sharing in the Word that day. Mm-hmm. What you were praying for, different reasons for hope that you had, stuff like that. I mean, that was kind of what was coming up, you know, maybe processing grief, but just being really transparent about your, I would say, walk with the Lord and your own emotions, but like on Caring Bridge that people could read. So that's kind of what was happening. So that was just giving some context there.
Yes.
What were you about to say?
I don't know.
Well, people, you were saying lots of people were then really paying attention and listening and being encouraged by it. Yeah, we were looking at the metrics and it was like crazy.
Thousands of people were starting to read these updates. And then I just became so passionate to say, you know, here's the thing that was my deepest, darkest moment. And it actually became a platform. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have to put the glossy coat on it. You know, I think in this process really discovered that more about the life of Jesus and his experiences of even before he went to the cross saying like, Father, if it's your will, take this cup from me, but not my will, yours be done. And my experience is nothing like going to the cross, but it was something that I found very painful, and I wanted the Lord to take it from me. And I asked him to take it from me, but I also said, not my will, but yours be done. And I could talk about that, mm-hmm. and I could be real about that, and I could say, these are the parts I hate, but I trust in the faithfulness of God. I trust in his promises. And this is how I'm seeing the daily promise of God come to reality in my life, mm-hmm. even in the midst of suffering. One of the coolest things, actually, one of my friends shared with me at the time was an excerpt from a book that she had been reading on the subject of adoption, of all things. But the person going through that adoption journey shared some about their struggles and pains and experience of God being present in that. And this whole idea came to me through this book for the first time of just experiencing Jesus as a wounded healer. We're tended by a wounded healer. Mm. And so when we can talk about, like, I'm going through situations that are wounding me, but I'm being cared for by one who has experienced suffering and grief and everything we can imagine as a human being, Jesus experienced himself, mm-hmm. and he meets us in that place with compassion.
That's good. That's good. Got a message title for you.
Oh, yeah?
When your pit becomes your platform.
Hey, let's go.
Just saying. Okay. I'm just trying to set you up there, okay?
Okay. All right.
I was thinking about you writing and kind of going in with the fear of what if I get hurt through being more transparent. Did you ever end up getting hurt? Did it backfire? Mm-hmm. Did you ever have like, oh, why did I say that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't recall being hurt through like the writing and the Caring Bridge experience and the website side of it. I did experience other things that people said that were just a little insensitive.
Yeah.
And not with bad intention, but just insensitive. And, you know, and the tricky thing is what is one person considers insensitive, another person might not.
Right. Yeah.
So I think that's just part of it.
Well, the reason why I bring that up is in general, when we deal with fear issues, almost always, the thing we fear is never as bad as, you know, what it seems like it, you know, like kind of what it purports to be.
Right.
And so I think that in general, when we're facing obstacles, anxieties, things that seem too big for us, opportunities, even any of them really, mm-hmm. then all these fears crop up. And we have to, in those moments, really activate our faith, which is what you did, and say, hey, I believe the Lord is calling me to do this. I'm mm-hmm. not going to let fear be the thing that stands in my way. And what's really cool is then when you take that step, which, you know, there was a time in your life where if I would have suggested that, you'd been like, no, you are crazy. And then you take the step and you go, oh, that turns out it wasn't nearly as, you know, painful. And sometimes it's, you know, nothing bad happens at all. Mm-hmm. Or the challenge of it's not that bad. And I think anytime you experience that, like courage, you know, lessons like that build on each other where it's like, oh, I took that step towards my fear. Mm-hmm. The reality wasn't nearly as bad as like my anxieties going into it. And then the next time you're facing a fear, you've got all the more confidence and courage to go after it.
Yeah.
Thinking about dealing with fear, I guess, makes me think about dealing with like limits in general. And I don't know if this will be a question that goes anywhere good, but you know, you're a more like a wired conservatively, I don't want to say play it safe, but more so, I mean, than at least than I am.
I'm more risk averse than you are.
Yeah, there we go. That's a good way to put it. So like, you know, your recovery, with each surgery, it's like, okay, you know, you can walk, you can try walking, you can do this, you can do that. And I guess I'd be curious to know what you discovered about just kind of limits and boundaries and pushing and when not around that time and through that experience?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a good question. I think that when I look back on that time, you know, there were so many different things that were just so hard, and I felt so many limits and physical limits and all different kinds of things. And you were such a good cheerleader for me at this time, because I remember in the opening days after surgery, when I was so like drugged up because I was in so much pain and I just couldn't like wash my own hair and, you know, all the things, you got a whiteboard and you created a win list.
Oh my gosh. I forgot.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And, anytime, like the smallest minutia of win would go on the win list. Yeah. Like it would be like, put on your own shoes, or, you know, like, it wasn't even like you walked 3 miles. It would be like you walked down the stairs, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But the win list, and we kept it posted in the bedroom because I was in the bed all the time. And anything that we could think of, and it just became this visual reminder of like, okay, there are positive things happening. There is momentum happening. But I think that whole experience of walking through that season of like recovering and limits and taking risks and all that, what you said to me during that time actually is stuck with me so much, and I've said it to so many people, is you don't know your boundaries until you run up into them. And so like, try it a little more. Mm-hmm. Just try something. And if you hit the boundary, that's not a bad thing. That just shows you hit the boundary, and then you dial it back.
Yeah. Cause your normal interpretation of like, and when we're talking boundaries, as folks are listening to this, I mean, they've got to interpret this kind of metaphorically for themselves in their own unique situations. But the big thing I remember was how far you could walk. And
yes,
so we'd
right.
be going around the neighborhood. And your personality is like, if then you had some pain afterwards, you would normally interpret that more or even quite negatively. Like,
yeah, I did something wrong. It
right.
was bad. I shouldn't do that.
I shouldn't have done that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, that if it sets things back or really messed you up, obviously that would be true. But mm-hmm. but truth be told, that wasn't what happened. It usually right. was like a, I don't want to say momentary pain, but it wouldn't last that long. And, you know, you would have discovered, and in the process, by the way, you pushed further than you'd ever pushed before mm-hmm. for a pain that was momentary. And, you know, you discovered something really important. Mm-hmm. And I just think that, like, you know, so many of us are biased towards the safest, easiest, most comfortable route. And then maybe it's because we've had some pain in the past or whatever, when we pushed a little further, you know, it's like and if we do get to the pain point, you know, it's bad. And I guess it just felt like it was a time for you that really recontexted that on like, I want to push more. I want to, mm-hmm. to take some greater risks. And when you say you've shared that with other people, I'm guessing that has not been just about cancer-related
no,
kinds of things.
No, so actually, probably never about cancer, because it's so few people's experience. I mean, a lot of people, but
yeah.
in the day-to-day. Yeah, I mean, I think this is so relevant to time management, to taking on more responsibilities, to all sorts of things, taking risks in a conversation. But I've had a lot of conversations with people about like, hey, just because you're really busy right now and you feel frazzled and crazy doesn't mean you made the wrong decision.
Mm-hmm.
It means you discovered a boundary. And so then you just need to make some adjustments. And like you said a second ago, you pushed farther than you've ever been before. Great job.
Right.
Great job.
Yeah.
So now you just adjust and kind of figure out how to work within the framework a little bit better.
Yeah. Yeah. And the cost, like on the side of pushing a little harder, the cost you pay is maybe a little bit of pain or uncomfort from a discomfort from the learning. But I guess it's good to remember the pain going the other way is you never reach your full potential.
Right.
So it's just good for all of us to remember, when it comes to pushing ourselves, you're going to pay on one side or the other. You're either going to pay on lost potential, lost opportunities, lost, you know, impact, or you're going to pay on the side of, man, I was a bit more aggressive. I bit off more than I could chew. And in most cases, you can then make very sensible and honestly quick adjustments to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I feel like, and this is where my course personality comes out, I feel like I always want to err on the most aggressive sort of approach, not foolishly aggressive. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't want to be stupid. I don't want to spend, you know, 10 years digging myself out of some hole because I went after too much. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's not what we're talking about, obviously. Yeah. But I do want to be, hungry. I want to dream big. I want to go after it in a sensible, faith-filled fashion. And then, you know, if you find out, well, maybe that was a bit much, then you figure it out.
Yeah. And I think this principle even applies back to what we were talking about with transparency and sharing authentically and vulnerably, because there are risks in doing that too, that we talked about. And, you know, you could be kind of trying to control that situation so that you're not, like, a person could feel like, I don't want to take too many risks here because I want the safest possible, most ideal outcome. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a transferable principle that we're talking about, whereas, like, hey, risk it a little bit more. Risk it a little bit more. Say yes and trust that God's going to show up, because we cannot control our life. We don't mm-hmm. control the things that happen to us always. We do have agency and a role to play, but I think for someone that's my wiring to be really wanting things to be more locked down, you know, there's a grace from God in saying, I'm going to allow you to be in situations that are feeling out of control, right, so that you can learn who's really in control here mm-hmm. and how to really trust and how to pull things out of yourself that you didn't know were there.
Yeah, that's a good word. You know, also, when it comes back to that win list idea, I totally forgotten about that, but I can mm-hmm. see it in my mind. In fact, for years, we like kept it.
Oh, yeah. I think I still have it. I never erased it. It was like...
Oh, that's the sweetest ever. Well, you know, I was just thinking, of course, the reason why that was so important is because that the season felt like this is just where all you're getting is pushback and obstacles
loss.
And limitations and loss.
Yeah.
So it became important to just celebrate the small steps and small places of progress. And I think that's just a really good principle of life, mm-hmm. you know, to make sure that we're disciplining ourselves, particularly during difficult times, to find things to celebrate. There are always places to celebrate. And there's always progress that can be made, even really during hard times.
Yeah.
And, of course, the journey with cancer and all this and surgeries never stops, and there's procedures that have to be had and whatnot. And you've had one of those not long ago. And of course, it set you back on working out and set you back on your weightlifting and all the things that you've been doing. So then it's like back to celebrating, you know, again, some of those milestones, because you can fixate on the backwards progress. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, I'm using those weights again, which I haven't used in a while. But then you move on to your next weight level and you celebrate each of those steps.
Yeah. And it's a little bit, too, about the mentality of, you know, not getting sucked into your problem as a victim, but to be like, I'm okay. Mm-hmm. You know, yes, there's a setback happening or a difficult thing happening, but that doesn't define me. I'm not going to get swallowed up into it. I'm going to continue to look forward, but I'm not going to manufacture that for myself. You know,
right.
I'm going to look to the Lord to guide me in it and make the choice on how I'm going to show up in those situations.
Yeah, totally. Do you look back ever and think about anything you would have done differently than what you did? Or, I mean, I feel like you handled it with God's help pretty well. So, and of course, you had an amazing husband, so that helps.
That was the key.
But anyway, anything you'd do differently or you'd have your husband do differently?
I honestly don't. I don't think so. I don't think so. I'm not saying I did it perfectly, but I don't. I think we tried to take the situations as we could. I mean, what I would say to myself now, if my older self were able to talk to my 34-year-old self, you know, there's a really important element of just the grounding of saying you're going to be okay. Like, you're going to make it through. And, you know, I remember, you know, with our kids being so young and two of them had birthdays in May, and I was thinking, I don't think I can make their birthday cakes. I don't think I can celebrate their birthdays in the way that I want to. And it just was like another on the long list of like small griefs mm-hmm. that I was feeling and that I feel uniquely, I think, as a mom. And you know, being where I am right now, I think, you know, part of going through that experience, it's good to talk to people who've been through it because you go, okay, I can, they're through it. I can get there. And I wish that I had a little bit more of that, like, older self saying, you're going to be okay. And this is, I knew it wasn't all loss when I was going through it, but the benefits of this season will far outweigh the losses. Mm. And I don't mean just the health benefits of, like, you're going to be able to be active again, which is a huge deal. But what God did in my life far outweighed the negative story. And so I sensed some of those things were happening, but I would have benefited from my older self saying, stay grounded in that truth, because that's where you're headed.
Well, even that idea of you're going to make it through, I think we've had some other things, not with cancer, but whether it be leadership things or other kinds of difficulties that we've, you in the middle of it, you're like, oh my goodness, it just feels like a cloud you're stuck in. And we've had people who have said to us, we have been through similar things, and we're just here to remind you, there's going to come a day, you're going to get through this, it's going to be great again, all that. I don't know, it's weird. It's helpful to know that. I think that if anybody listening right now is going through a time of suffering, mm-hmm. we just need to say to them.
That's right.
I mean, there's going to be a light at the end of the tunnel, mm-hmm. and you might not feel like it's close right now or that you can see any semblance of that light, but many have gone down the tunnel. And that's another thing, too. I think as I've talked to other leaders in particular, I'll say now, we're shifting the topic a bit, but I think early on, different suffering kinds of things, you feel like, I'm all alone in this. And then you realize, oh, wow, everything I've gone through, now I know 20 leaders who have gone through exactly the same thing. Mm-hmm. And they're all doing great, basically. Mm-hmm. And so it's just really good, and that's true with people going through cancer and a lot of other difficult situations. Doesn't mean the pain goes away. It doesn't mean, you know, you come to a day where it never hurts, or the pain, the memory doesn't hurt. I'm not saying those things. But it is fun to have people that, or not, I don't say fun, but encouraging to have people say, there's light at the end of the tunnel. You're going to get there.
Yeah. And if any of the listeners are going through something or like that right now, I just would really encourage you to find people who lift you up and who help you believe a narrative that's not one of doomsday and, you know, inward, but they help you pull out of your situation, surround yourself with people who pull you up.
Yeah, that's a good word. When it comes to boundaries, I mean, that really, it pulls a boundaries question up, because there are people who, when you're, and especially again, when you're in tough times, there are people who you know will elevate you, lift you up, et cetera. And there may be some people that don't so much. And I think it's okay to put up some boundaries and maybe not spend as much time talking to those people.
That's right.
Yeah. I can't think of any specific examples off the top of my head from our lives, but I don't know if I'd want to share them.
But I will not be saying any names today.
But, you know, you just recognize, like, hey, at least for this season, I don't have the capacity to be with that person as much.
Yeah.
And that's okay. And
right.
Sometimes we just have to give ourselves permission for the season we're in to say yes to certain people and maybe no to others. Mm-hmm. When you think about how the overall journey shaped you and what the legacy of going through that experience is today, what comes to mind in terms of that ongoing impact?
I think there's so many things, and I'd be really curious to hear what your thoughts are for yourself on this. But, you know, there's some character formation stuff of resilience and just confidence, you know, some of that character side. I remember there was one day when I was just going through it, and my dad had been praying for me that day, and he happened to call me, and he just said, Christina, I just feel like I was praying for you this morning, and I feel like what the Lord wanted me to share with you is this verse from the Bible that says, perseverance must finish its work so that you're mature and complete, not lacking anything. And I held on to that, and even today, I mean, 17 years later, thank you, Dad, I still go back to that when I'm in a situation that is hard for me. And even you referred to, I had to have a surgery a couple months ago, and nothing like what I had before, and my health was not at risk. It was just different, but there were things I had to persevere through. And I don't look at that as just a physical perseverance, but a character. Like, my character needs to not be wrecked when something difficult happens to me. So I think, you know, there's character formation for sure. I think that, you know, what God did in my life, like, I was walking with the Lord before this happened, but my intimacy with Christ just went to a whole nother level through this experience because it turned towards Him. I looked to Him in my pain, and I experienced Him in my prayer time and in worship, in the Bible, and through people that I knew, people that I didn't know, you know, like creation. Like, I just saw Him everywhere. And even when I was going through the really difficult things, it was like, it's not like I was just on this one track of it was good or bad. It was like concurrent tracks, difficult and most blessed intimate time of my life, like with the Lord at the same time. And so I think that experience is probably the greatest legacy coming out of this of formation of, like, I am so locked in with the Lord now in a way that I wasn't before. And I feel like I know the sound of His voice better because He spoke to me so personally.
I think that's really good. And it really makes me think of something that Rick Warren said years ago. He talked about, he used to look at his life as a series of, like, hills and valleys. I'm either, like, life is really good or life is hard. And he switched his metaphor to a train track with, at any given time, he's got one track in his life that's all the really cool things that are happening. And then he's got another track that's the difficult things that are happening. And he's riding on both tracks at the same time. And I feel like that is, I think that's a good, helpful image, because it means that, like, we get less polarized on life is either good or bad all the time. It's like we can see the goodness during the hard seasons. And then when things are good, we can still acknowledge there are tough things, and, and we're not so, it's either or mode in our lives. So anyway.
There's one other thing I feel like in terms of that season of life and just the legacy of it. And I think it's interesting because being at the center of a crisis point, I mean, we went through it together, but it was more on my shoulders from a direct standpoint. It can be really easy to have that experience be all about me. And I remember there being a conversation. I remember where we were sitting in our house having this conversation about, like, you know, you just kind of going, like, hey, I know this is a really hard thing for you, but, like, I'm over here. And it was very sensitive and very appropriate. And I remember just thinking in that moment, like, and I even said this to you, like, when we said our wedding vows in sickness and in health, I didn't think I was going to be the sick one. And in my mind, I thought, well, it's going to be really hard if Brian gets sick one day, like, but I'll care for him, you know? Yeah. I didn't think, like, I am going to be the sick one. And the vow applies either way. And at some point you may be, or I might be again, we don't know. But the pledge is to be present and unified no matter what happens. And so I think that was a really difficult conversation, but it was emblematic, I think, of a larger thing that God was doing in me to say, don't get so sucked inward that you're only about yourself. Like, yes, this is a huge deal, but, and you talked about this earlier, like, there's so much life going on around you and people in need around you and people in need in the world far away that are going through much more difficult situations than what you're encountering. And you can still be present and connected to those things. And so, like, you don't get a pass on others, you know, caring for others or other-centeredness just because you're going through a hard time. You're going through a hard time. That really matters. And so I just think that that outward awareness and looking beyond my circumstance and myself was another thing that I feel like, you know, the Lord just did in me.
Yeah, that's really good. I mean, that's every time I feel like I'm getting really overwhelmed with a problem or dealing with some opposition or whatever, I really try in those moments to, because the tendency, like you said, is to get super self-absorbed about, oh, woe is me, basically, and mm-hmm. how tough my situation is. I really try to like force myself to start saying, I'm going to pray for some really big problems in the world mm-hmm. as a point of just discipline. Because the more I start praying for all these other people yeah. and just like interceding for them, it doesn't make my problem go away, but it sure does give it perspective. And I just think there is something just supernatural in, this is the thing that's like counterintuitive about the kingdom of God. It's when we serve Jesus, when we put him first, there is something spiritual where things come back to us
yeah.
in a way that, that he meets our needs. Mm-hmm. And it's just weird because like our human sort of flesh thinking is, I've got problems. I've just got to look out for me. I've got to care for me. I got to think about me. And just the paradoxical nature of the kingdom is it's not just like, oh, by looking at that other person, you put your problem in perspective. It is that, but it's like somehow in that act, I just think the Holy Spirit like empowers you in a fresh way mm-hmm. that all of a sudden you go, I feel better about my situation and I mm-hmm. feel stronger and more capable and more equipped. And I think that's a spiritual thing.
Yeah. I mean, Jesus said, when you lose your life, you're going to find it. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's like that whole, it's the paradox.
Yeah.
It's surrender.
Yeah, exactly.
What would you say were the legacies of that season for you?
I think that, I'm trying to think of ones that are different than yours. I mean, I think the power of the local church, it was mm-hmm. one of those times where you say the local church is God's plan A for his work in the world, for human redemption. But then when you're the recipient of the power of the local church, that's just a really cool experience, particularly when you're the one who planted the church.
Yeah.
So that was really cool. I think that the importance of having community that supports you was really cool, and making sure those relationships are in place before you need them.
Right.
Not, oh man, now I'm in a bind and I don't have the kind of people I can talk to. You know, the reason why I had guys that I could talk to very candidly and vulnerably is because I had been building into those relationships long before any of this happened. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that was a really good takeaway. And so now whenever I'm calling people to get connected, it's like, you know, I just know this is what's at stake. And the problem is, of course, so many people don't want to be proactive about it. And so, you know, if they're comfortable, they're not getting connected into meaningful and deeper relationships. And then they get something that hits, and then now they don't have the support they really would benefit from. So I think that community thing was a big deal. I think the importance of our marriage and what it does for each of us was probably just like a fresh light on that. In the sense of how hard it was to do what I do with us not being in our normal place. We weren't in a bad place, but we sure weren't at like our marriage peak kind of place. And so I think that, I think that it was just one of those, wow. And we both feel this way, that just so much of how we operate and serving people and leading the church and all that flows from our marriage connection. And it just wasn't, it was weird because it was super connected in some ways. Like we still talk about great talks and all the drives to the hospital and all the drives to doctor's appointments and how, in a weird way, I probably say this more than you, I really enjoyed all the time with you. But so it was like,
hey, I enjoyed the time with you, but I didn't look at it as a date.
So, yeah. So, on the one hand, we were super tied in, but on the other hand, it so much was like under the lens of cancer stuff mm-hmm. that it was not the normal thing and you know, just other kinds of connections. So it just was like, that was a fresh bit of awareness too. I do think that I was thinking about you saying you depended more on the Lord and were closer to him in a unique way than maybe ever before. And it did make me think about why that is. I think that happens oftentimes when we're in times of suffering that, you know, we draw close to God. And the to me, a takeaway from that is, of course, none of us voluntarily sign up for suffering, and there's nothing wrong with not wanting to suffer unnecessarily. But I think that one of the things we can do to help, for too many people, their closest times with God are limited to when the things that bad were happening to them, or crisis out of their control. And I think a takeaway is we can put ourselves in reasonable positions of stretching that require us to call out to God mm-hmm. more without it being a crisis.
Yeah.
So, yeah, for an example, like as a church, whenever we take on a big initiative that I'm leading, I feel drawn to God in a whole new way. Mm-hmm. We were doing a big project last year, and I felt super close to God. And this year, I miss that spiritually this year because I don't feel it in quite the same way. So that's a little takeaway, I guess, when it comes to what brings us close to God and not like waiting for a crisis, so to speak.
Yeah, that makes me think of something that came to my mind, which is that, you know, if someone has had let's call it a mountaintop experience or a time of incredible intimacy with the Lord or a season where God really showed up in a defining kind of way, like a defining moment season, it's really easy to look back and be like, that's the well I'm drawing from. But, you know, just like when the Israelites were in the desert, God was giving them manna every day. And he said, don't keep yesterday's manna for today. You need fresh manna for today. And after going through that season, it was almost tempting to be like, well, that's the well I'm going to draw on, and that was the best intimacy, and that's the most defining moment. And then I started to realize, like, no, I want more of God. I want more defining moments. I don't want to sign up for more suffering, but what I do want to sign up is for more intimacy with Jesus. And if that means more suffering, I'm willing to do that. But if I can encounter that in a different way, that's a plus. Thank you, Lord, please. But at the same time, just kind of saying, like, what do you have for me fresh today? Kind of what you're saying, mm-hmm. like, how do we put ourselves in positions to have, like, that maximum connection with the Lord? And if there's anything else in the way, I just want to say we need to get rid of it because it's just not worth it. It's not worth it. And what our hearts desire most is what only God can give us.
Yeah, that's a great word to end on. And yeah, just a great encouragement for all who are listening. No matter what you're going through, whether you're mountaintop high, you just got a raise, you just got a new job, you just got engaged, whether you're right just in the pit right now fighting a health issue or a breakup or some other kind of painful experience, the best thing in your life can and always will be Jesus and more of Jesus. And so in the midst of wherever you're at, don't let the high distract you from wanting more of Jesus, and make sure the low is leading you to Jesus. He is your best, and he's going to be what is your rock foundation through the hard times, and he's going to keep you grounded during the good times. So it has been really great chatting with you for this last hour or so, Christina.
Same with you, Brian.
Do you think you'll do it again, or do you think this is like one and done? You've had enough of podcasts after this.
Listen, I'm not going to lie. I was super nervous before this started, but I feel like I found my sea legs, so I'll come back.
Okay, good. Well, you've heard it here, folks. We're gonna count on Christina coming back. So thanks a lot for being here. I'm super grateful, and we'll count on another conversation. We've got a couple other subjects already cooking, so I'm just saying, your time's coming, okay? Well, I hope you enjoyed this conversation today. It was absolutely great to be able to spend time with the one and only Pastor Christina Ulrich. And I sure hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please rate and review the conversation today. Don't forget, you can send in any questions you have at madetoadvance@engedichurch.com. This has been a production of Engedi Church, and we've got more great conversations on the way. And so until next time, just know God made you to advance.